Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast.
All right. We had a very rare weekend, Aaron. A very rare weekend for February cinema. We had two films come out, both in the 90 percentile on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know the last time that happened in the month of February, which is a historically and traditionally dead month for cinema.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's never happened before.
Really, though?
Yeah, I don't think it's ever happened before.
I want to look it up. Yeah. I don't think it's ever happened. In those two films, John Wick 2 and Lego Batman. Lego Batman pulling in about an estimated $55 million, and John Wick pulling in about $30 million. Not a bad haul for either film. So we're going to talk about both films. This episode is all about Lego Batman. And then we have a John Wick 2 episode that will be going up on our Patreon listing. So you want to tell people about our Patreon listing, Aaron? I feel like I'm the broken record here.
Well, here's the thing. Everyone likes hearing from you.
Yeah, right.
I think people actually fast forward through my parts. They use that 15-second fast forward often.
I have analytics set up to track that, and it's actually not true. They fast forward through Skylar's parts. He's not here to defend himself.
Well, that's a little known fact. If you go on our Patreon page, which is go to patreon.com and search for Brave Little Podcast, there's actually a feature where you can get the Skylarless podcasts, both video and audio. So. Yeah, and just donate $3 a month, and you get access to our full video library, all our special episodes. We do an extra episode every week just for our Patreon patrons. Go check it out. It's patreon.com/bravelittlepodcast.
That's right. patreon.com/bravelittlepodcast. So
$3 you can go a month. There. That's it.
You're going to see our John Wick 2 episode, which drops Wednesday. We've done one on Sundance. We've done one... the last one was our top five football movies. So please check it out. We got some great stuff going on there. We are coming up on our 100th episode, where we will be doing our top 10 films of all time. Now, I should probably clarify, top 10 films of all time, it's probably more like our 10 favorite films of all time. I've actually been working on putting my list together, and I realized that it's better expressed that way, our 10 favorite movies, each one of us. And I'm considering maybe we do, it's going to be a two-parter, and maybe we do, maybe 10 through 5 episode is going to be on iTunes, and then our 5 through 1 is on Patreon, which will be...
That's such a dirty way. It's such so a dirty, underhanded trick, but I like it. I like the way you're thinking, so...
I don't know how else we're going to reach our goal of $100 a month.
I think if we just... We start making some good podcasts, maybe then people will start.
That's probably what it is, huh? Yeah.
But that's the hard part. Like, it's really hard to do this. So making it good is the very difficult part. So.
Yeah, yeah. So that's our Patreon plug. We do have one other plug before we talk about Lego Batman, and that is our other sponsor for this week, which is brought to you by the Miracle of Life and Birth. Because our little tripod here of co-hosts, you'll notice the one is missing, Skylar, and that's because today, him and his wife welcomed their new baby girl into the world, and so we want to congratulate Skylar and Kara. He sent a photo to us early this morning, and beautiful baby, and it's healthy, and his wife is healthy, and so understandably he couldn't join us. On this episode, he's still in the hospital, actually, is what he texted me. And so he did tell me, though, that he should be good to record next week, because he said that so far it doesn't appear that she the baby is a screamer, so she should be able to just kind of sit on his lap as he records. And so you might see in our video pod next week an introduction to the new baby, which would be great. I encourage you all to welcome Skylar's beautiful baby girl in this world by sending him a little love on Venmo. It's baby gifts are a thing we do. I know he's registered also at a couple places.
Yeah, I can attest to that. I know that he's registered on Amazon. So if you just search for his name in the registry, Skylar Teo, it'll pop up. And I know that firsthand because I did that And I actually, I purchased some beautiful hand towels.
Ooh.
For Skylar and his wife. And, you know, I never got a thank you, which is, it's kind of odd, I guess. I know they're just hand towels, but they were on the registry.
Oh, they were?
So, yeah.
Were they like so silk? Very, like.
Well, I mean, thousand thread count. So, yeah.
Wow.
Basically silk.
Yeah, the baby right now is wrapped in those hand towels right now, by the way.
So, yeah, you're welcome, Skylar.
I hope you had them embroidered with Aaron Alvarado on this. So you sent him hand towels. So far, I've sent him nothing. I need to do that. Go to Amazon, look for the registry. His last name, Tio, is spelled T-H-I-O-T. So like Thiot, T-O, which is a French pronunciation. Do that or similarly on Venmo if you just want to shoot him $5-$10 for a baby gift. I know he would appreciate it. He's at Skylar T.O. No space, no dash, no underscore, just at Skylar T.O.
And his buddy Sean Spicer or Spencer. Yes. No Spicer, right?
Yeah, you got
Spicer.
It. Yeah. Yeah, Spicy.
Yeah, he sent him $20. So,
yes, he did.
So follow his lead.
Oh, that's great. SNL, which I don't think has their strongest cast right now in its history, still is putting out some great, great sketches. This past week, Melissa McCarthy came back, which I guess, is, to be fair, Melissa McCarthy isn't part of their cast, but she came back to revive Sean Spicer. Did you see this skit?
No, I heard it's really funny, though.
Oh, it's really, really great. It's really, really funny. I know we avoid talking politics on this pod. I say that, but we talk about it all the time.
I don't mind talking politics, but I try to actively avoid talking Saturday Night Live on this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I'm much more of a Mad TV fan still.
Well, Utah politics was in the news this week because the head of the Senate, Ethics Oversight Committee? I'm saying that wrong. The House Oversight Committee.
Yeah.
There it is. The House Oversight Committee is the chairman of that committee is a congressman from Utah. His name is Jason Chaffetz. And he held an open town hall here in Utah this week, one that I seriously considered attending. And the thing about these town halls right now, especially, is that a man who was just reelected with an overwhelming majority. You know, when you do these town halls, you're not getting the people who voted for you, right? You're not getting the people who supported. There's not like a motivation for them to attend these things and be like, yeah, I voted for you. You're my guy, right? You're opening it up to people that have grievances to air, right? And I heard from a lot of coworkers and neighbors and other people that were they were all going to be attending this thing. And, you know, I'm ashamed of myself because I should be a little more politically active, although I'm not a registered voter in Utah. I'm still in California. Because I'm a California resident still, you know, I could go there and be upset. But like the truth is I'm not actually one of his constituents. And so it's not, you know, that's my out here. But truthfully, I just knew it'd just be a disaster parking and getting in. And apparently they didn't like there were like over 1,000 people outside of the town hall, venue that couldn't get in. But they Facebook lived this town hall Q&A. And it was absolute chaos. Now, these things are, I think, typically slightly chaotic when you don't have a lot of organization or structure and like a good, like, you know, mic, someone with a mic that's walking around and handing, you know, it was like a WWF event in some ways and pretty remarkable for someone who, again, was just reelected to with an overwhelming majority in a typically red state. But due to the unusual circumstance of having a president that has, to put it kindly, some major ethical dilemmas, to have the head of the House Oversight Committee, someone who was active in investigating Hillary but has not been active in investigating Trump, you know, you're opening yourself up, right? But I don't know what he was thinking, if he thought that it would be a safe place, but this was a rowdy and upset crowd, and as soon as I started tuning in on Facebook Live, I knew. I was like, oh, I'm watching this whole thing because it's that good.
Yeah, I mean, it was a scene straight out of Parks and Rec. If you've ever seen the when they had the town halls on Parks and Rec,
yeah,
it's literally pulled right off of TV. The way that it was going down, the amount of insane people that had to speak their minds, it was really funny to watch. I thought he handled it pretty poorly, to be honest with you.
He did. Now, the thing I do need to caveat this, though, is that, you know, this is a completely voluntary thing. And there have been reports of, congressmen and women who have held these types of town halls in much smaller venues where they restrict who can be in there. And then they sneak out the back and end it way earlier than scheduled. Now, he was scheduled for 2 hours, and I think he made it through about 90 minutes. I think he left like 30 or 40 minutes early. But I remember watching I remember thinking towards the beginning that, you know, I don't know how long he's going to be able to take this beating. People were just chanting. He couldn't even answer questions, to be honest, because people were already yelling, like, answer the question or the chance of do your job.
I thought I heard a lock him up chant, which was pretty interesting.
Yeah, there was. There absolutely was. They had this little girl with a mic that said, asked him if he believed in science because she did. And she just basically dropped the mic, this little girl. And the whole place goes nuts. I'm watching this thinking like, this is really, really intense. Like, there's no way he would have expected it to be that, that hostile.
Yeah.
But the people, again, not to get too crazy political, I feel like there's a lot, they had valid reasons to be upset.
Right. Well, that's the thing. So they it's like just like in 2008 or 2009 when Obama took office, he stirred up the hornet's nest with the whole Tea Party thing.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Now it's the other side of the coin. Right. And now you have the most fervent, not even radicals, really, but they're really aggressive and they're really opinionated and they're really upset.
Yeah.
So now you have the other side of the coin, and it's a lot of really upset people. So we'll see how it plays out. But we do know how it played out with Obama and the Tea Party.
Yes,
they were effective, and they essentially made his second term almost pointless.
Well, the midterms,
Well, they flipped him they flipped the Senate at the midterms, and then those people stayed in power. And 2012 was just a nightmare. 2012 on was just a nightmare for Obama. I mean, he couldn't get anything done because the Senate was turned, and he didn't have the supermajority anymore. So we'll see if that happens to Trump. I don't know.
So
it could, but this is going to be very difficult.
I was alluding to giving, Chaffetz some credit for one, showing up and doing it. But these, he's a publicly elected official. I think we can expect a lot of these people. And he stayed for an hour and a half. And even though he did it, I feel like a pretty poor job of handling the questions and whatnot. He did it. So he deserves at least a modicum of credit for that, even though I do think he deserved every bit of hostility expressed towards him. At least he did it. But then he lost all of that little tiny goodwill he even had by immediately suggesting the next day that his town hall was bombarded by out-of-state progressives. Did you
did
see
he
this?
Really say that?
Oh, yes, he did. Paid. He said they were paid progressives from out-of-state. Came now. This is absurd, right? Like, it's just like you can't be serious. Like he said the quote had something to do with he said that you could see it leading up to the event on message boards. They were reading that there were these organizers that were paying Democrats and progressives to come in and bombard his town hall. That those aren't majority of the people weren't actually his constituents, which is such a slap in the face.
Yeah,
because it's like saying like anyone who disagrees with him must be a paid protester. Right.
First of all, where are their message boards? Are message boards still around?
Yeah, I know.
Is he still going on IMDb? Is that where he's seeing this?
Oh,
stuff?
No, their message boards shut down. Actually, they just shut
down. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. For being too hostile. So Seth Rogen tweeted earlier today, or maybe this was yesterday. He tweeted, looking back, I think North Korea was paid to protest the release of the interview. There's no way anyone could actually dislike our movies. I think that's just, it's a little out of touch to think that way. Like, to not face the reality that your own constituents are that upset. Now, granted, the dude's seat is not in jeopardy. He would get reelected. There's still, a lot of, Republicans there. There are plenty of progressives and plenty of liberals in Salt Lake, in the surrounding areas in Utah, and more than enough to fill that room, which is what happened. But the idea that he's so out of touch to think that there are a lot of people in his own, in his own home state that that have major, you know, grievances to air is just kind of sad, right?
Right. But well, I mean, this is part of the process, right? So we these elected officials, they don't just represent one side; they represent everyone that's in their community,
yeah,
or whatever their area is. So I think it's good that he's actually hearing the other side, and he can't ignore it. Well, I mean, he can ignore it,
yeah,
but he actually has to face it.
Right.
Even if he wants to deny it and say that it's out of town progressives, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
That literally would have been you, by the way, if you went to the.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying is that had I gone, like, that's precisely what I would have been, except I didn't get paid.
Yeah.
I did see there were other comments on Twitter floating around about how, like, if Jason Chaffetz actually thinks those were, like, paid protesters, then he needs to try doing, like, a low-budget film that requires a crowd of protesters and see how easy that is to, like, set up, you know, this idea that's, like, it's not – no, you can't really do it that easy.
Are we sure that you didn't get paid, though? Because I heard you took a $5 payment from your Venmo recently.
Oh, I did?
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you said that was for some services rendered. Were you talking about the protest?
Well, I won't say where the payment came from. it came actually. Okay, all right. It came from Massachusetts. It came from Senator Warren's office, who is the face of the movement. Of course, she has been, you know, famously in the news for being shut down at Sessions' confirmation hearing for quoting Coretta Scott King's letter. I know we talk about our different political persuasions and whatnot sometimes on the show. Elizabeth Warren is part of the Sanders camp. Trump famously refers to her as Pocahontas, which is pretty, racially charged epitaph. But he calls her Pocahontas because of this scandal where she had claimed to be Native American. Did you know much about this? I've always heard a little bit about it, but I actually dug in and really read about it.
I didn't know anything about it until he said the Pocahontas thing. Oh, okay. And I looked into it for a minute, and then I found out that she kind of might have actually did claim it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the details are.
You know what's funny? The more I read into it, the more troubled I am.
Yeah.
To be honest.
That's what happened to me. I actually like her, so I really didn't want
to. I know. I started reading. I was like, this isn't good. I mean, it's not reason for Trump to use that term.
Right.
I think that's totally inappropriate. But like.
Oh, yeah.
If you were applying to college and on all your college applications and registration forms, you had marked that you were of Native American heritage, that to me is pretty terrible.
That's rough. I mean, you can't really claim something that you aren't just to get an advantage. So one of my maternal grandmother actually claims that we do have Indian blood in us and somewhere in the lineage.
Oh, sure.
And, so, you know, we've always just believed her. We've always said,
well,
I can't remember what the tribe is, but I took a DNA test, a 23andMe, it's called.
Oh, yeah.
And the results are pending. So once those results come in, then I guess I can either.
Tell me why you did that DNA test, because I've been seeing a lot more people doing it. I'm considering it. Why?
So for me, it's pretty obvious that my heritage is Mexican, but beyond that, I want to know what else went into the mix, you know?
Yeah.
So really, that's all it is for me. It's just, I don't even need to confirm, other than the Native American or the Indian thing.
Yeah.
That'll be kind of interesting to see if that pans out, but I want to know what else is in there. What else is in the mix? So,
Would you be surprised to see some Israeli?
Sure, why not? Yeah.
Would you be amazed to find out you're 10% Jewish?
Yeah, why not? Do they actually list that on there? Because that sounds potentially dangerous.
No. You know, this. I kid you not. I feel like a lot of people have this story growing up, but I can't tell you how often I was told that we are part Native American.
Mm-hmm.
Never claimed to be very much, but like it's almost like an urban legend or myth within the family on my, I think, I believe it was on my mom's side, like from these journals from, you know, way back when that, you know, there was this Native American princess. And I kid you not,
mm-hmm.
our family always told the story like we believe this could potentially have been Pocahontas, like who historically was known as Pocahontas, but that there was this Native American princess that's on our family in our family genealogy.
Right.
And that, you know, that's we're just a little bit Native American, which could be 100% BS.
I think that you want it to be true because then you can do the red face Halloween costume.
That's what I'm getting at. Exactly. Right. So I get, yes, yes. So the second someone comments how insensitive it is, I can reply, no, you're insensitive. This is my heritage.
There's 0.5% Comanche blood in me, so I'm good.
You know, it could be true that there is like somewhere down the line, right? It could be true, but like the idea that it actually could have been Pocahontas to me is hilarious.
Yeah, that is funny.
And totally. Well,
it's like with the DNA thing. First of all, I love the technology. I love that we live in a time where I can literally just spit in a vial and mail it back, and then they can tell me what my genetic makeup is. That's fascinating to me.
It's really
like,
that's
great. Really cool. And I mean, the whole kit costs like $100. That's really nothing when you think about it.
So
for the advanced amount of science that's going into it.
So this is becoming, you know, a pretty big thing. These DNA sample send-ins, which used to actually require blood, now it's just saliva. Right. You know, I see this kind of, you know, snowballing. So my pitch to you is, why don't we find a way to expedite the process here, and why don't we open up like a mall kiosk where we just do it right there, like InstaFind, right? Like step on up. Take this, you know, Q-tip, do a little swab, hand it in. We punch it into a machine. We can write some sort of algorithm. Doesn't have to be necessarily real.
No.
And we do a little printout, right?
Right.
We could, in the fine print, we could say that we're as legit as the Zoltar machine from Big, right? I mean.
Well, you know, you joke about that, but there was actually a case of this woman who was one of the youngest self-made billionaires in America, and she built her fortune on this false blood type technology.
No.
Yeah, it was a huge story. It was about three or four years ago, and she had this startup where they determined that they could, I don't know what they're mapping, like a genome or something, but she had this revolutionary technology, and it turns out all of it was a lie. But it's absolutely fascinating.
There's a lot of money to be made there.
There's a ton of money to be made. A lot of hucksters out there, though.
Oh,
You never know who was actually telling the truth. Now, here's the troubling thing about me sending in my DNA. You know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, if the government taps them at some point and says, we need to see the DNA records for every one of your customers,
They're going to hand it over.
Without a question. Already look in the database whenever they want.
Well, you sent it to a government entity that's, you know, that's got like an LLC as something else.
No
right?
kidding.
Like, that's what you did.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's probably a subsidiary of the NSA or Homeland Security or whatever.
There was a day when that what we just said right there, it sounds hilarious and crazy, but it's not anymore. The idea of that not being completely private is a very is a reality, right?
It is reality, and that's the marriage between the supposed free market and the government, which is the scary part. And so, you know, my big problems with Obama leaving the office was that he did nothing to stem the growth of the NSA or Homeland Security, the powers. All he did was enrich their powers.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the final acts before he leaves office is he gives the ability all these groups, all these the NSA and the FBI and the CIA, the ability to share information easier right as the power transition from him to Trump is going into place. It's like, are you kidding me? You're handing this guy the keys to spy on everyone unilaterally. I just don't understand why he thought that was a great idea. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. It's the I think it's the liberal dilemma of, you know, like that's part of big government.
Exactly. It absolutely is.
Yeah, but it's also like the fight against this idea of privacy. This is why Ed Snowden has no friends in the presidency, because Obama refused to grant him any level of clemency or anything at all, because a lot of what Ed Snowden did revealed, you know, a lot of troubling things that were a direct result of Obama administration's actions. Right.
Right.
So the liberals don't want to claim him, and the conservatives don't want to either. You get Trump in there. And what has he said about Snowden up to this point? That he should be executed.
Yeah. He called him a traitor and said,
yes,
back in my day.
Yep.
Traitors were executed, or whatever he said. So stupid, by the way.
So, I mean, that dude is living in quote-unquote Russia for probably the rest of his life.
And that story just came out where supposedly the Russians want to hand over Snowden as a token of appreciation to Trump or whatever.
Yes.
I don't know, man.
Well,
did you see what Snowden tweeted after that story came
no,
out?
No, I didn't. What did he say?
He said, well, once and for all, I guess we can finally say that I am not and I never did work for the Russians.
Yeah.
So
because that was an accusation, right?
Yeah, totally. Well, I heard the Russians. I heard China. I heard basically anyone. Yeah.
Well, you're the one that convinced me that Snowden might not actually be in Russia.
Well, I hope for his sake that he isn't.
Me too.
Because I think if he Russia comes back to America,
no, Russia's
back
not
to Ameri-
an ally.
He's going to die.
Yeah.
No. Of course not. They don't. The only reason they were housing him is because it was pissing off Obama.
Exactly.
It made him look bad. It made him look terrible.
Yeah.
And
sure.
Now with Trump in the office, there's no. I guess there's no reason to hold on to that asset anymore. So, rest in peace, Snowden.
Yeah. Well, you did good. So. We do got Lego Batman to talk about. We've got news, movie rumors and news. Now I'm wondering if we make this a part of our John Wick pod instead. How about this? Here's a choice. We go over the headlines of the week, or we talk about this Oscars flowchart that I have alluded to in previous episodes.
Let's hear about that flowchart.
Okay.
It's coming up so quickly here.
So the Oscars are coming up. The Huffington Post reaches out to us, reaches out to me and asks if we will provide an Academy Awards or an Oscar-themed creative flowchart. We just did this for the Grammys. The Grammys, by the way, which are airing right now as we speak, as we pod, because Aaron and I don't actually care about the Grammys.
No.
But we
I haven't
do...
cared about the Grammys since Green Day was up for an award back in like 98. So the last
for Dookie.
for Dookie and what was the other? Insomniac, I think, was up for something.
Yeah. Nimrod was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we did the one on Grammys, and a coworker of mine, you know, wrote that flowchart, who knows a whole lot more about that than I do. But I am writing in the process of writing this one on the Oscars, and I'm doing it with another coworker. And I had we talked in the last episode about a bunch of different Oscar tropes to do. Well, she stumbles upon this resource and she sends it over to me. That's like almost like an exhaustive Wikipedia entry about Oscar bait and how Oscar like the origins of the very first Oscar bait film, and different types of Oscar bait, and it is. Fascinating to read, but it has allowed me to write this thing so much faster and so much easier. It's not done yet, but it's given me a whole bunch more examples that I didn't even know existed. And so going through here, it's broken down all these different types, all these different tropes, and about Miramax Films being, you know, the studio that was most notorious for making these Oscar bait films. Who in 1 year, Miramax, in 1 year they had Shakespeare in Love, Chocolat, Chicago, and Cold Mountain, all of which are blatant Oscar bait films.
Yeah, totally.
And then I love this. There's a film. Have you ever heard of this film? Come See the Paradise. It was identified by UCLA study as the most blatant Oscar bait film in history. It is a period drama that spanned the Great Depression and World War II. It touched on Japanese internment, despite having a safely white, clean-cut male protagonist, including a maligned mixed marriage between a hero and a Japanese woman, and ends with the main character returning to his family after serving prison time for a years-old crime he was an unwitting, innocent accomplice in. The Academy basically ignored it, apparently out of disdain for the sheer shameless pandering. It's called Come See the Paradise. It was a 1990 film starring Dennis Quaid.
Well, I'm looking at the cover of that, and it looks really familiar. I'm sure I've seen it at, like, Blockbuster, but
I've
never watched it.
It's amazing.
Movie. It sounds terrible.
So it goes down a whole list and talks about the different different crimes or different Oscar bait
offenses.
Yes, like Lovely Bones, Million Dollar Baby, Flags of Our Fathers, and Letters from Iwo Jima, mm-hmm. The Changeling, Gran Torino, Invictus, J. Edgar, American Sniper, Jersey Boys. It talks about even David Fincher trying his hand at Oscar bait with The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Doubt being one, which is funny because some of these films I like. I mean,
yeah.
Doubt was one I really liked.
So, that makes me question, like, at what part of the process do they determine, like, let's gear this towards Oscar, like, towards an Oscar nomination? Does it come in the writing process? Does it come in the Does the producer step in and say we need to shoot for some Oscars here? Or,
yeah.
So like, let's change up the scene. Let's get a rewrite here. Or I wonder what part of the process is involved with that.
Yeah, it does make me wonder. Or some of these are conceived from the get go, or they grab some sort of source material and be like, okay, we're gonna use this source material and we're just gonna jam this thing.
I wouldn't put it past the studio executive.
Oh no, not at all. In fact, it cites The Reader, the film The Reader, as a film that did just that. It's a Holocaust themed drama, complete with promotion from the master Oscar baiter Harvey Weinstein. It's supplanted The Dark Knight and WALL-E from Best Picture nominations, despite most people feeling like both of those films are better. It couldn't even beat out Slumdog Millionaire, is what it says.
Yeah, I don't remember the movie.
The Reader with Kate Winslet?
Yeah, I didn't see it.
Yeah, I didn't see it either, but I remember it getting nominated and it being a big old deal because it didn't make very much money. No one really cared about it. It was totally Oscar bait. That experience was enough that Hugh Jackman was already lamenting the Batman film snub during the ceremony. It also often is seen as an impetus for doubling the number of Best Picture noms to 10. Because I remember that being the case. The Dark Knight not getting nominated is the reason they changed their whole Best Picture nomination thing, because like, there was so much of an outcry. But The Reader was nominated that year, and that was the film that was one of the reasons it beat it out.
Right.
So it's got a list of films from, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close to The Iron Lady to 12 Years a Slave to any David O. Russell film. it's pretty remarkable, all the list. But they have the actual offenses. I'm trying to look up where it says it here. This is so great. So there's the period piece or costume drama, the biopics or based on a true stories. Mm-hmm. They're set it during the Holocaust. It has, oh, so great. I know. It says man's inhumanity to man is a genre of Oscar bait film, which is really, I don't know exactly how they define that. The downer ending, the true art is angsty. Let's see. Broadway musicals. And then it talks about the different history of animations. Oh, yeah. Make it about mental illness or mental disability. And it has the list like Rain Man, One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest, Forrest Gump, What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
So that's not really fair, because a movie like What's Eating Gilbert Grape is actually really good.
Yeah, well, no, that's the thing here is that, to be clear, some of these films are very good.
Right. And when I watch What's Eating Gilbert Grape, I don't think like this is shooting for an award. I feel like this is just a different story, especially at the time. I don't think anyone was making movies like that. And then you have maybe Leo's best performance.
Yeah, we got nominated.
Yeah. When was the last time you've seen that movie, by the way?
Oh, it's been several years.
Okay, now that you've experienced Leo's entire career, how it's unfolded, go back and watch that movie and I think that's probably one of his top two performances.
Wow.
Yeah, he's so good in that. It's incredible.
It's got the other categories here include The White Man's Burden. it's a common trend where a privileged white character will take it upon himself to help an underprivileged minority and thus show his nobility. Films like Gran Torino, The Blind Side, Freedom Riders, Glory Road, The Soloist, Dangerous Minds. There's really quite
Last
a few.
Last King of Scotland. Was that nominated?
Not on the list.
Oh, man. It should be.
It does have the recent phenomenon. It says about playing, a straight person playing a gay, lesbian, or transgender character.
Yeah.
Dying for your art. It has, man, these are so great. Let's see. Oh, man. They have a whole section here about the subject of abused, illiterate black women. And it has a whole list of them. Which is really from Precious to The Help to, there's quite a few on this list.
That's a very specific topic. I never even considered that.
I hadn't considered this either. It has having a physical disability, not just a mental one, is a major one. And then here's the one. I was wondering if it was going to make the list. And sure enough, the female equivalent of the mental health angle is having an attractive actress play an ugly character.
Perfect.
You brought this up.
Yeah.
And of course it lists the most famous one, Charlize Theron in Monster. But Nicole Kidman, who wore a number of prosthetics to play Virginia Woolf in The Hours, Anne Hathaway.
I thought you were just going to say anything that Nicole Kidman's done in the last 15 years.
Hey, she was good in Lion. I just saw Lion. Good, really good film. She's really good. Yeah. No, she's really good. And then mentions Anne Hathaway and Les Miserables. Really, I could keep going here. There's a whole bunch of stuff. It has a section on losing or gaining weight, the physical transformation type of stuff. Yeah, man, it's like this huge, I mean, it's amazing. I'm barely touching
that's a all these categories. Right, so there.
It's really, I can't wait to write this.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one.
I hope the HuffPost is going to be okay with the angle. I have not told them that's the subject of the Oscars flowchart.
Oh, okay.
Because the Grammys one was a little more fun. A lot of Beyonce, a lot of, Justin Bieber. But this one, I'm not going to be mentioning really anyone specific from this year. So hopefully they'll come
up. I haven't looked at the Grammys flowchart. Does every tree end up in Beyonce winning?
No, but we we start the flowchart being like essentially giving them an out to get to Beyonce. Because the question on the flowchart is, which Grammy nominated artist are you? And at the start, is it like, let's be honest, do you love Beyonce? I'm trying to remember the exact question, but it's like, do you just love Beyonce? And let's just get this over with. And it's like, yes. And it leads you down to Beyonce.
Perfect.
So that's like the very first question.
That's great.
Yeah. Yes. And speaking of which, congratulations to Jay-Z and Beyonce for their alleged pregnancy. really happy for both of them.
That photo was definitely doctored. I don't know. I'm not buying it.
Yeah, but the real MVP is the surrogate. We just want to give them a shout out. I love conspiracy theorists.
That's an Oscar bait movie right there. Beyonce surrogate.
Beyonce surrogate.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, the thing is, she's illiterate.
Oh.
She's illiterate. Yeah. She's illiterate. She's trans, and the actress gained 75 pounds to play the role.
So, oh, perfect.
Give me 5 Oscars.
So, transitioning from Oscar bait, then let's get to Lego Batman, the most
Legos.
Oscar. Oh, Legos. Sorry.
Legos Batman.
There are more than one Lego in the film, yeah. So it's plural. Legos. Legos Batman. This is an episode that I really would like Skyler to be here for. He was someone that has long been talking about the Lego movie's Oscar snub, and rightfully so. That film was very well received by critics and audiences, and it got snubbed at the Oscars because I don't think Academy voters actually watch animated films, and I think that they just nominated whatever they, just whatever seemed interesting on the list, and it was a major outcry, and no one loves Legos more than Skylar Teo. And he.
Well, that was on the short list for his baby's name.
It was. Yeah. Yes, yeah. It was. Well, it was going to have Legos, whatever name they decided. It was going to start, it was like Legos Batman, Legos Ninjago, Legos whatever. It was going to be Legos and then the name that they came up with. But I think he might have lost that battle with his wife. I need to double check.
Thankfully.
Yeah, seriously. Because Legos have as a preface is terrible.
In my showing in my theater, I don't know if you saw it, but the commercials beforehand, there was an ad for like the Lego alternative. I don't even know what the name, it's not like the Tyco, it's something else. It's like Blocko or something.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's like the fake, it's the knockoff Legos.
Oh, I did not see that.
Yeah, it looks really cool though. I like the set. I was like, that looks way better than Lego.
Well, I can't wait to see their movies. Now, so you saw this movie at a pretty late showing.
Yeah, I caught the Friday night 10:40 showing.
Okay.
And it was a packed house, lots of kids.
I was going to ask that because I saw a Saturday afternoon. It was a sold out showtime, and there were, of course, it was full of children, which is actually the way I want to experience because I'm interested in knowing what they laugh at and how their response is to this film. But at 10:40, I wondered how many kids did you really have in the theater?
Yeah, there was probably probably about 100 seat theater, maybe 120. I would say a good 40 seats were kids.
Wow.
Yeah, so a ton of kids.
Wow.
And I have to applaud them. They were quiet for the most of the movie.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. I think the movie itself might have put them to sleep in the second half, so I don't blame them.
Into that. Yeah. Did you like it? Because I guess we should, since Skylar is not represented here, Skylar loves these movies. He got an early access, screening of it. He actually saw it on Monday. And he was so wild about this film. Now, it's 90% in Rotten Tomatoes right now, 90 or 91. So very well reviewed, well received by critics. I want to know how you responded to this film as someone who doesn't like this type of animation, and how your crowd responded.
Yeah. Well, I'll fess up. I didn't like the Lego Movie.
Okay.
I didn't like it at all.
You saw the first one?
I attempted to watch it 2 times.
Okay.
The first time I made it about an hour in, and then I just shut it off.
Wow.
Second time, I made it halfway through the Everyone is Awesome song, and then I shut it off.
That's at the beginning.
So, exactly.
Okay.
So, when I heard you guys wanted us to review Lego's Batman, I wasn't exactly looking forward to it. But yeah. I am a big Batman fan.
Yes.
So I'm a big fan of the intellectual property of Batman. So anything that he's involved with, I'm gonna check it out. So yeah, I go into this movie, not high expectations. I didn't mm-hmm. know how they were gonna treat the actual story and the characters. I figured it would be lighthearted and a comedy, you know, following in the same vein as the first Lego Movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pleasantly surprised, I think. If I had to give the movie an overall grade, I'm probably going to give it a C+.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I would recommend it if you don't have anything else to do, go ahead and watch this movie.
Oh gosh.
Wow. If you like Batman, you'll probably like this, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was lukewarm on it, and
I'm proud of you how positive you're spinning a C+.
It truly is a C+ in my eyes.
Okay.
But I will say that my theater, they enjoyed it a lot more than I did.
Yeah.
Like I alluded to earlier, the first half of the movie is really fun. Lots of jokes, funny, tons of laughter in my theater, like uproarious laughter.
Oh yeah.
Basically standing applause for after the first musical number, the I Am Batman song or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know what the song is, but he's like just Batman being a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, everyone was huge pop for that. And then about an hour in, it turns into a serious kind of a, I don't know, buddy movie, kind of downer
a movie
Batman.
A movie about teamwork.
Yeah. And I thought it dragged. And I think the theater itself was begging for some more laughter.
Yeah.
Because it was deathly quiet. I mean, we're talking about almost a full hour of the movie. Nobody was laughing. No kids were laughing.
Yeah.
Now, there were some sight gags. There were some callbacks to other Batman characters or things from the past, like the Bane voice. I thought that was pretty funny.
Really
but
funny.
Kids didn't get that.
Nope.
The kids, that totally went over the head. And it was like a 1 second throwaway thing.
Yeah.
So, well, and that, you know, like to further the point, I just felt the movie was uneven
mm-hmm.
through and through. Like the beginning is very frenetic. It's super fast paced. Visually,
yeah.
It's like, I mean, I'm glad I'm not epileptic because there are so many flashing lights.
Yeah.
And just things happening on the screen. Like it's visually kind of a mess for me. But at least like there was a ton of jokes and it was funny. And I felt like they captured the ethos of Batman really well. Like a lot of the characters are there from the TV show, the old 60s TV show. They referenced the original Batman movies, which was I thought was really funny. They even they poke fun at the fact that they're rehashing story plots, basically. They poke fun at the Suicide Squad thing. So like that stuff I thought really, really worked well. They captured the mythology of Batman. But I don't know, man. It's just something about it just didn't sit well with me. I wanted to like it more mm-hmm. than I ended up liking it. So, like I said, a solid C+. I would recommend it if you like Batman, you'll probably want to check this out. Otherwise, I would skip it.
So. All right. Yeah, you know, it's and I appreciate you going to see it. I know that's one of the sacrifices you make for this pod is having to go buy tickets to movies you would not have seen.
Well, I did get the student discount, so...
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, it was $9. Yeah.
Well, at least
you
got
didn't even have to show ID.
At least you did the student one and not the military ID discount, which you've been known to do.
Yeah, well, I do the senior citizen. And then when they call me on it, I just say... I just ask for their manager, and I walk in anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think I like this movie a little bit more than you. However, your reservations and qualms with it are definitely similar to mine. It did feel a little uneven, but it's interesting with these films. these types of animation films that, you know, are, I can't imagine how hard they are to write, but they're these ones that need to appeal to the lowest common, you know, age of child in terms of, like, you know, having butt jokes or other things that are, you know, the little kids are going to laugh at and be entertaining to them, but also have this level of humor that the kids will go way over their head, but won't be too boring for them, right? But like the adults will get, it's like the Shrek films, I think, especially that first one did a marvelous job at that and really kind of broke ground at being like even slightly edgy, but also like still appropriate for kids. I don't think it gets, you know, that edgy necessarily here.
No, they play it safe. They play it really safe.
There's a couple of things that are, I guess, minorly edgy, like when the kid talks about his name being Richard, but the kids in the old fridge call him Dick, and he goes, kids can be cruel. Stuff like that.
That was a funny line. And also, the relationship between Batman and the Joker is basically gay. Like, they're gay.
Sure.
They're gay for each other.
Yeah. Right, which is a subtext that they're not kids. I mean, it's not so overt that kids would think that, right?
Right. And then they have to make Batman like overly hetero to compensate. Where he's like drooling over Commissioner Gordon's daughter.
Right. So. But what's so hard about being entertaining and also being funny is that in the case of the Lego movies, which, you know, they've really built out a kind of a genre here with the, you know, the next one being the Ninjago one, they'll keep going. It is the stop motion style and freneticism that you alluded to earlier that makes these films unique. It's what made the Lego film, I think, really different and great and stand out from the average animation, if that's what, you know, that's the category we're putting this under, which it is. There's absurdity here, right? It's absurd comedy. It's moving super fast. It's so ridiculous. And with the Lego movie, they were able to tie in a message, and it ended up cutting to these actual filmed scenes with Will Ferrell and being this businessman with his son. And it actually, drove the message home and the point home and was really made it sweet and not just absurd, which is a difficult thing to do. I mm-hmm. think the Lego Batman movie did not succeed there. They had a message that they wanted to convey, and it was about teamwork. And it was about how you need to be working with others and not be so self-involved. And you've got, you know, the only way you can accomplish great things is by doing it together and with others. Not necessarily a bad message by any stretch, but that was such a heavy emphasis in the final 45 minutes that it came at the expense of the jokes, which were coming like 100 mile an hour fastballs in the first hour, disjointed.
I think you're totally right there. And if I had to compare the first half of the movie to a real life human being, it would be Robin Williams, without a doubt.
Yes. Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like the second half was Bicentennial Man. And and the first half was, let's think here. Mrs. Doubtfire, maybe?
Mrs. Doubtfire. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually, you know, as if you're going to personify it, that's probably the best person to pick. But the movie opened, I thought it was really funny. I think one of the benefits of the Lego franchise is that they're able to tie in other properties, and I don't know how that totally works with Lego's licensing agreements with all these different franchises. You know, obviously they do that for the Lego sets you can buy in store, but how that plays into the movie, I don't know. But they were able to tie in a lot of that. In the first Lego movie, it was with superheroes. In this Lego movie, or in Batman Lego movie, it was, they were able to grab Sauron from Lord of the Rings, the dinosaurs from Jurassic Park and Jurassic World. They were able to grab Godzilla, King Kong. They grabbed Voldemort from Harry Potter, which I was cracking up because you hear this guy doing a voice of Voldemort, and he's doing his best Ralph Fiennes impression of Voldemort. Ralph Fiennes is in this movie as Alfred.
I didn't even know that. That's funny.
He's out. Like they could have easily gotten Ralph Fiennes to do Voldemort, but of course they didn't. They get someone else to do it. I don't even know who. Which really, I mean, it really cracked me up. But I mean, yeah. I would like to think that they asked Ralph Fiennes to do it, and he was like, no chance.
So who did do the voice is my question.
I'm pulling Eddie Izzard.
Oh, wow. That's great.
I know. So I pulled up the cast list to see who did it. Eddie Izzard. I love this. Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face, who was Two-Face in Tim Burton's.
Yep. He
and then
sure
they got
was.
Conan O'Brien in there as the Riddler. Yeah. Didn't realize that. And I know Zach Galifianakis is Joker because he's.
You think that he did a good job as the Joker?
Well, as I don't know, as good as you can, given the fact that you just got, you know, you got Heath Ledger's Joker, and then you've got you know, what's his name?
I think Mark Hamill is the Joker.
In the anime, right.
Yeah, so
you've got
this
iconic
Joker
Jokers you're dealing with. The most recent one, though, wasn't iconic, which, why am I forgetting his name in Suicide Squad?
Leto.
Jared Leto, who was just terrible as the Joker.
No, Jay Leto. It was Jay Leto.
But, it didn't bother me. It sounded like you didn't like it, though.
No, I mean, I thought it lacked. Like, a lot of the movie, I just felt like there was something missing. I couldn't put my finger on it, but there was something about Galifianakis' performance that just didn't do it for me for most of it. I don't know, man. I think I went into the movie not expecting a lot, and then as I got closer and as I started watching it, I think my expectations started to rise because I felt like I saw how well they were treating the characters in the world, and I got optimistic. And then as it plays out, I was kind of let down.
Yeah,
so
that's interesting how it does that, where it's like you kind of came in with low, and then the strength of the start, it kind of boosted it.
Because the first 10 minutes of the movie is really fun.
It's really good.
It's really good, and I think for me, that was the apex of the movie.
Yeah.
It was probably the first 15 or so minutes.
Yeah, it's hard to keep that level consistently.
Impossible. Yeah, it's impossible.
It is. My theater personally was, I mean, it was uproarious laughter, especially at the beginning. I mean, the kids were loving it.
Yeah.
And there's certain jokes that I was just like, you know, I mean, there's the scene where Alfred is asking Batman to do something he doesn't want to do. And he throws essentially like a little tantrum where he goes, no, no, no. And his little Lego body does all these different positions as he goes up the stairs and saying, no, no, no. It got such big laughs in my theater. The kids were going wild for that.
Yeah. Huge pop in my theater too for that scene.
Yeah.
I found myself chuckling there at the end. So like even for me, like I'm a cynic and I'm a curmudgeon and some of the scenes got me. So.
Oh yeah.
Even if you're jaded and you hate cartoons, there's some moments that you'll like it. So.
I agree. Looking at the rest of this cast, by the way, King Kong was Seth Green.
Really?
Sauron was Jemaine Clement from New Zealand.
Wow.
which is perfect. Channing Tatum was Superman, which I did recognize that one. And I did recognize Jonah Hill as Green Lantern. He didn't even put on a voice. He was just talking as Jonah Hill. Adam Devine was in there as the Flash. I didn't recognize that one. Mayor McCaskill was Mariah Carey. Didn't know that one. There's one reporter in there voiced by Brent Musburger.
Oh, wow.
And another reporter voiced by Chris Hardwick.
So my question to you is, did they need all the people from the Phantom Zone? Like, did they need that? All those extra characters.
The only reason why is because they decided to open the film with a complete, you know, all of the Batman world villains. And they wanted to do this huge opening number, which worked. The opening worked. But because they did that, they needed to draw from another villain, you know, pot or well, I should say. And that was the Phantom Zone. So.
Exactly. So that makes sense. But I just feel like
it was a lot,
man. Yeah, it was too much.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, which I guess really goes into the absurdity. But I do agree it was quite a bit. Now, this was directed by Chris McKay. Are you familiar with his work?
Not familiar with. I saw an interview that he did recently, and he's extremely British. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it looks like his work has been in Robot Chicken.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's primarily like in these types of animation work. Mm-hmm. And this previous, right before Lego Batman, he did the last pizza commercial, a short film. Don't know. Don't know about that. Ultimately, I land where you land in its unevenness. Will Arnett, I think, did do a great job title role. I mean, he's got that voice that's perfect for it, and he was hilarious in the original Lego
movie.
And
he's got, he has the attitude perfectly, just like sarcastic. Joe Bluth, for lack of a better, I mean, he was basically playing Job.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I was hoping for an Arrested Development reference of some kind.
Oh, that would have been great.
Yeah, yeah, it would have been, which unfortunately never happens.
How'd you feel about Michael Cera?
Michael Cera gets a lot of crap for not ever changing the way he acts and just kind of being Michael Cera, which, yeah. You know, we'd be hypocrites here. We constantly rail on Jesse Eisenberg for doing that. Mm-hmm. But Michael Cera has that boyish, kind of bright-eyed, bushy-tail voice that I think works for an orphan in this case. I actually thought he did really well. I thought he was fantastic.
I don't like him, but I liked him in this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, totally. All right. So I'm just getting, headlines pop up on my phone during the Grammys that Adele drops an F-bomb during Halted George Michael tribute. I can't wait to see what that was about. What a headline. Well, again, Skyler was over the moon for this film, as expected, for his love of both. Yeah.
He said it's the best Batman movie ever.
That's what he said, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and he did say Zach Galifianakis's Joker easily outdoes Heath Ledger's. Though I don't know if Zach Galifianakis will be getting an Oscar for this one.
Well, and if you go back and read the text thread, he said it's better than Heath,
yes,
but not as good as Jared Leto.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You're right. He did say that. So it's, I guess, number two on the hierarchy.
Right, and then he said Jack is way below. Like, he said Jack is, like, the fifth best Joker.
Oh, yeah. He said Jack should have, yeah, he's, like, had no business playing the Joker. He said it wasn't even the Joker. It was just Jack, you know?
Yeah. Jack and Whiteface is what he called it.
Yeah. Speaking of Jack Nicholson, he's coming out of pseudo retirement.
He sure is.
You know, this is a guy who hasn't been in a movie in about a decade.
Right.
And he appeared to be all but retired. He kept denying reports that he was officially retired. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at this point, I think a lot of people just assumed he was, he was pulling the Rick Moranis, he was done. He just signed on.
I assumed that he was retired when I saw him in The Departed. So.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. That movie won an Oscar, a big one, best film and best director.
Yeah. So why do you think, what do you think he's seeing in this movie, this remake? I can't remember the title of it.
I can't even possibly imagine, because there's nothing in the press release that I read that had any inkling of, like, this is a good reason to get back. I mean, the guy doesn't need money. And from, from unconfirmed reports, his health was declining. He's old. I completely understand why someone like him, or in Sean Connery's case, when he, retired, he stayed retired. But there were serious reports about him and his memory, kind of, not necessarily full on Alzheimer's or early onset dementia, or just dementia, I should say, not early onset. But I figured there's probably at least some truth to that. It was probably harder for him to memorize lines and whatnot. And you think, like, you know what, you don't, Jack, you've done enough. You don't need to keep making movies. You've had an incredible body of work. And yeah, when you're that old, it's got to be really hard. So I figured he was probably done. So him coming back, I don't know if maybe those reports were completely not true, if it's a small part. I don't know.
I can't imagine that it's going to be a big part, because, like you said, if he's having problems remembering lines, and it's going to run into a like a Brando situation. Brando, at the end of his career, he's flat out refused to learn lines, by the way. Yeah. So he would just have the script out of eyesight, or out of camera sight, I should say, off camera.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically probably what's going to happen to Jack. Because, let's go back to the part of it. He takes a lot of crap for his performance.
Yeah.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
But you have to blame some of it on Scorsese. Because he shouldn't have accepted the performance that Jack was giving him.
Yeah.
But because Jack is Jack.
He's Jack.
He said, okay.
The dude said, made The Shining. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He's one of the most iconic actors of all time.
Without a doubt. I mean, his resume is almost flawless.
You don't pull Jack aside and say, hey, Jack, you just went from a Boston accent to a New York accent to a Jersey accent. You can't do that in this film. It takes place in Boston. Like, you can't do that.
You can't do that now, but if it's 1979 and Scorsese's at his peak and Nicholson is basically still at his peak, you can.
Yes, you can.
You can, and you work with him to do a much better performance.
Right.
But, Elder Statesman Jack, he's not going to listen to anything.
No, he's not.
He's going to do whatever he wants. So So I really wonder what about this film has him so interested.
Yeah, it's like maybe he owed a favor. I don't know. But I like my Jack Nicholson to stay retired. You know who I wouldn't mind coming out of retirement? Joe Pesci.
Who's that? Oh, Pesci's great. If he's in a movie, I'm going to watch it.
I feel like Pesci still has something left in the tank.
Can we get a Goodfellas sequel? Let's get a Goodfellas 2.
Could you imagine? He's dead, though, so.
Well, it would be a prequel, actually.
Oh.
Yeah.
With an old, you got to do like CGI to make him look like younger Pesci. Heck, I'll take him in a Home Alone, I'll take him in a real Home Alone 3. You know, I know they made a Home Alone 3, but it's not Home Alone unless it's got Macaulay Culkin and Joe Pesci.
Well, yeah, we do a Home Alone today.
Yeah.
We bring back every actor, age appropriate.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah. That's actually a great idea.
I think I would watch that. I really would. Dude, Trump would do it. We could get him in there too.
Yeah.
Just like.
No kidding. You know what's funny about the Home Alone series? So growing up, I see the mom from Home Alone, and like throughout my entire life, I felt like she was this older lady, like she's this matronly older lady. And Catherine O'Hara, I went to look at her age when she filmed Home Alone. She was 35.
Oh, wow.
She's literally my same age that I am right now.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's mind-blowing. I don't know if it was just the style of the time or just me being a child when I first saw it, but I just feel like she's an older lady.
Isn't that?
No, 35.
It's remarkable. It's like the first time I read, a headline about Mark Hamill in The Force Awakens is the same age that Sir Alec Guinness was when he filmed A New Hope.
Yeah,
and it blew my mind. Now Sir Alec Guinness has more white, kind of the gray hair, which makes him look even older. But you think like no way, like Obi-Wan in A New Hope is really old. Like Mark Hamill's not that old. He's a middle-aged man, right? And no. I mean, they're both like 60 or something like that. 61. It really blew my mind.
So crazy.
Blew my mind. It's really interesting. But
yeah, I think it's just all perception. You know, people look younger now when they're older. But oddly, people looked older when they were younger at the time. So I don't know, man. It's weird. It's just kind of like I feel like I'm getting older, but then I don't know. I feel like I'm not. Sometimes I feel like a man child, basically. I'm sitting in Lego Batman, for Christ's sake.
I know.
it's like, what am I doing?
Yeah. You're doing it for the pod, is what you're doing.
This is true, yeah.
Well, you and I are both kind of man children. And Skyler is no longer because he gave way to the first brave little baby.
That's right.
You know, you and I are not fathers, but Skyler is, and congratulations to him.
And when she says her first words, we're going to get her on the podcast.
We are.
And that will be the first official female guest on the podcast.
Oh, perfect. Although, don't tell Lindsay that, because she does have that distinction already.
Well, she gets docked because she was supposed to come on
the dog's purpose. I know.
So, yeah. We docked her one.
She was there for, it was Fantastic Beasts. That's the one. But yeah.
That's right. That's
yeah.
Right.
That might be the one and only for her. but yeah. Yeah. It's funny. So I turned 30 in a couple weeks. And I know you've already passed that. You're into your 30s now.
Yes.
But I've only recently started thinking about 30 and the fact that I remember my parents being in their 30s. That I have real memories of celebrating their birthdays when they were 30, whatever, in the mid and late 30s, and thinking how old that was. And just the idea that I've entered that decade, or I'm about to, has started to play tricks on my mind. And then also the reality that this is the decade where my body begin breaking down rather than, getting better. Now, it's a slight breakdown, right? It's not until your 40s and 50s when things really start hitting. But but it really is like the peak. Like, your body isn't physically getting better anymore, right?
Yeah, no, it's all downhill.
Yeah.
Rapidly, apparently.
Yeah, well, I'm not looking forward to that part.
Yeah, no, me neither. The thing is, you look at athletes. So I always compare myself to athletes.
Yeah.
As far as physicality goes. Obviously, I mean, look at me. I'm clearly a well-trained athlete. No, but I was just watching UFC this past weekend, Anderson Silva.
Oh, yeah.
Anderson the Spider, 41 years old.
And he won.
He won his match.
Yes, he did.
So,
yeah.
It's pretty wild, man.
Well,
so.
There's that way of looking at it. But there's also, like, I think it was a couple years ago, so like 28, is when I realized that, like, you know, in some alternate reality where, you know, I pull a Dennis Quaid and I figure I can pitch 100 miles an hour, you know, the MLB wouldn't draft me because I'd be too old.
Way too old.
Yeah, 28 years old. I couldn't play professional sports because I'm too old. And that to me, blows my mind.
Well, yeah. I mean, so I follow the NHL draft really closely, or used to, not so much this year, not lately. But guys that were drafted when they were 18 are retiring in the NHL.
Yeah.
So guys that are my age have retired.
Yep. Yep. It's remarkable.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, the same thing on like TNT broadcasts when there are when they're referring to players that hit 30 or on the other side of 30, wrong side mm-hmm. of 30, and referring to them as like this, they're past their prime.
Right.
Like a 30-year-old NBA player being either end of his prime or past his prime.
Right.
Or, you know, just referencing his age in that way, being like, well, he is 30. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. A 30-year-old NBA player is like, you know, is old man, damaged goods type of.
It's the end of the line.
Unbelievable.
Well, the Dodgers have Chase Utley just re-signed. So last year he was the old man of the squad, and he was like 37. So,
so
it's
crazy.
Like 2 years older than me.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But then the one thing is, I guess, you know, people tell me I look pretty young for my age.
Yeah.
So I do have that going for me. And, you know, I see people on the news, like, committing crimes, and it's like this old person, or they look old to me, and it's like they're 34.
Oh, yeah.
So it could go the other way, too.
You know what's funny is I think we can say that probably about all three of us that host this thing, is that I think we all have a baby face type of – now, I grow a beard to make it look a little older. If I shave this thing, I'm 21, 20,
right,
maybe.
Right.
Like, I'm right – you know, it takes 8 years at least.
Easily.
And – which is, you know, I guess that hopefully that'll play to my favor at some point. It's still like almost, I'm still like mildly bashful about it.
Right.
But like Skylar looks young. You definitely look young for your age. I would.
Well, I look young until like you see my hair. I have like gray hair.
Oh,
so
really?
I have gray temples now.
Okay.
So well, I got to keep my hair short.
There you go. Or you can, you know, you can start using some color.
Oh, and that brings us to John Wick. We got to get into that.
Okay.
So
speaking of John Wick, it's going to be a really terrific episode. Go over to Patreon. It drops Wednesday and listen to the John Wick episode. It's just $3 a month. You're going to get a lot of great content. But we are over an hour, nearly an hour and 10. So we will wrap this up. Anyway, go to Amazon, look up Skylar Teo's registry, baby registry, or go to Venmo at Skylar Teo, get him a baby gift. Send him a brave little thank you. Send him some diapers, send him some hand towels.
He's going to need it.
He will.
So
he will.
Because apparently he threw mine away. That I
The neighbors maybe stole it. That's the thing.
I think the doorman.
Yeah, the doorman could have taken him. Yeah, it's possible. Because Skylar doesn't hold back gratitude. So
apparently he does when it comes to me. So. I think it's because he knew that I didn't like the Legos Batman.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, he was hoping that on the registry you would have purchased Legos instead of the hand towels.
Well, I was going to get him some Tyco blocks.
That would be the best. Off-brand Legos. All right. Well, let's wrap this up. We'll see you next week. As we say, hold on to your butts.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.